You are listening to the Myth TV Cast. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Myth TV Cast. My name's Pat DeVille. With me is my co-host, Dan Fry. Dan,
how's
what's
going,
up?
Pat? How's good, it going, man. Pat?
Good, good, good. Exciting times. Lots of things going on.
Yes, it is. I'm calling this the Myth TV Cast Release Extravaganza.
Where would you like to start with?
Oh, there's a lot going on. There's a lot going on. Let's see. We'll get into each of these in turn, I think. But I think the big thing right now is two big things really is that Myth TV has released version 0.26, and the new renamed Myth TV Android front end has been released to the Android market. So those are the two big things that are on my plate. I know we've had some other releases in the past few weeks. Linhess has had their 9th. Anniversary, and I believe they released 7. I think it's Linhess released 7, I believe it is, or 7.4. I forget what the number is off the top of my head, but they had their release, you know, not too long ago. Ubuntu is rolling around to a new release coming up, so I don't know that they're going to respin Mythbuntu at all because they moved to the long-term support model for releasing Mythbuntu. But there's always going to be some new things coming out every time the core Myth TV gets released. So.
Yeah, it's good, exciting stuff. I mean, I upgraded my install to 0.26 today. And for the most part, the install went okay. You know, I'm running with Ubuntu. The only issue that I had was the databases didn't do a clean update. And when I tried to restart the first time, I got this message saying database is not found. And I quickly took a look on the user's mailing list. And apparently this is an issue with Ubuntu where Myth TV is using a different configuration file than it did in previous versions. It's now using a file in Etsy Myth TV called config.xml. And in there, you have to have your host, your username, the password for the database, and the database name. And apparently it looks like when the Mythbuntu upgrade happened, for whatever reason, the upgrade script didn't copy the information from the old configuration file into the new configuration file. So, as soon as I updated those fields, I restarted the system. It seemed to be working okay. And then the other issue that I had was MythWeb was not working cleanly. And apparently there was another issue where the configuration changed the location. It's now getting its configuration file from Etsy Apache 2 sites-available, and it's now using a file called mythweb.config, and it's the same deal too. It's missing those fields, and once I updated those fields, everything seemed to be working okay. So as far as I can tell, everything is working okay. I don't have any issues. You know, my systems were doing recordings okay. I'm able to access my recordings. You know, everything looks okay as far as I can tell.
Well, that is great to hear. I haven't had a chance to do the upgrade myself yet, but I'm hoping to do it in the next few weeks here as some time becomes available.
And it doesn't seem that much of a difference as far as, you know, the menus and whatnot. It seems pretty close. So
I believe a lot of this release was in the back-end stuff, the stuff that we don't typically see or interact with on a daily basis. But I believe that, you know, with 27, which I believe is expected to drop, I think I saw sometime in the springtime, possibly late spring, early summer, and there's supposedly some pretty nice enhancements coming then.
Yeah, it sounded like this release was more of an infrastructure, you know, cleanup and getting things ready for moving things forward.
Right.
Which is fine.
Speaking of moving forward, how about that for a transition there, hey? I want to first introduce, we have a special guest with us tonight. We may have a few other people dropping in as well, but we will... But for right now, I want to introduce Sebastian Esti. and he can correct me again if I'm wrong with saying that. But Sebastian works with us on the Myth TV Android app. Hey, Sebastian,
hey,
how's it going?
Good, good, yourself?
Oh, we're doing well. We're doing well. It's been an interesting couple of days for us with releasing the app. So we started working. There's four of us total, and I think I mentioned this on a previous episode. But John Babb and Tom Kenny, and Tom, if you remember, is the guy who wrote the Myth Mode application, and he's incorporated all of the Myth Mode functionality, well, most of it, I would say, into this application. And John is a Mythbuntu developer, and he wrote the Myth export scripts that are out there. And Sebastian found us just by happenstance. He was looking to do some work with Myth TV and start working on a Google TV application that integrated Myth TV. And now we've all kind of joined together to start, you know, building out this this library and working on the Android app. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, that sums it up pretty well. So yeah, actually totally by. I was looking for somebody who has done something with Myth TV and Android, and that's how I found the project. And then I saw the issue tracker saying, "Hey, we maybe need to abstracting the API in Java." And so I was like, "Oh, that's something I can do and something that I can use."
It's actually, since we've been sitting here, somebody did bump one of those issues in the issue tracker out there about Google TV. So we have to take a look at that in a little bit.
All right, I will check it out.
No, but after talking with Sebastian these last couple of months, I guess it is now, right? Sebastian has one hell of a Myth TV setup. So before we get into anything else, just tell us a little bit about this setup that you have running at your place.
All right, my setup has been growing pretty much organically from a dissatisfied Windows Media Center user perspective. I did like the concept of my Windows Media Center with the extenders, and got into the fact that I can't even, you know, stream a DVD, so I was pretty upset. So that's how I ended up switching to Myth TV, and I went from having your typical, you know, two drive system to what has become a monstrosity right now, as I can say it.
One thing first, real quick. How long ago about did that switch over take place from Windows Media Center to Myth TV?
I switched to Myth TV on 0.18.
Oh, okay, so you've been running it for quite some time.
Yeah, for quite some time. So it went, right now what I'm running is pretty much a octa-core processor with a little professional-grade RAID system, which has 16 drives of 2 terabytes connected to it in RAID 6. And so that serves my whole house.
I love it. It's awesome. Keep going.
So yeah, that thing right now I'm running, what do I have? I have a 3 HD home run, the dual tuners, so I have 6 ATSC/QAM tuners, I have HD home run prime, but the 6 tuner version that runs on top of that, and I have, I'm sad to say, 4 HD PVR boxes.
For a grand total of, how many tuners is that?
For a grand total in just QAM, 12 tuners plus 4 on the HDPVR, so 16 tuners.
Nice.
That is a setup.
You got
me. And I think the only thing that kind of mirrors that is a few months back we had William Talkington on who was setting up Myth TV for an entire university. Okay, so that he is almost on par with what I think they're going to be running at a university level.
Yeah, that's my problem. Once I get excited about something, then I just go crazy. So that's how I ended up. I'm looking at it right now. It's sitting next to me. I'm thinking, oh God, what have I done?
Well, hey, we're all geeks, and we all tend to get that way, you know, sometime or another, right?
Yeah, when you start to have to think about, is my power supply going to be able to handle that many drives spinning up at startup, it becomes pretty problematic.
He probably has, you know how many days worth of recordings going on, and, you know, on that back end there at some point. It's just...
He's got
It's
everything
insane.
recorded. He's always recording. It's like that story that came out of, I don't know, it was a couple of years back, where this guy basically recorded everything on every channel, and he made it available to like his entire neighborhood. It kind of almost sounds like that kind of a setup. Well, let me ask you, Sebastian, how big is your storage? How much disk space do you have?
So right now I have so 16 2 terabyte drives on that thing. That's just for the data, but it's set up in 3 different units because I didn't want to have that much issue. I didn't want to have the system going down if I had a fail of 3 drives at once. So I have separated in multiple units. So technically, I have 32 terabytes worth of storage, but with the RAID units. So I have 1 RAID 6, so I lose I lose 2 drives on that, and I have another RAID 5, so I lose another drive. So I have 16, so 13, 13, so 26 terabytes.
Nice.
Damn. It also doubles as the heater for the house.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
I gotta tell you, it is nice and cozy in my basement.
I bet it is. All that
No,
content and the hum of some drives spinning in the background.
actually, it's not that bad. I did. I'm. It's pretty quiet. I've been very careful in choosing, fans, and because that machine originally, I have this big chassis that I bought years and years ago, but not even for that purpose. And I changed all the fans, and made sure that everything is nice and quiet. So it is actually not that bad in terms of the humming. I have a PC at work that sounds much worse than my server with all those drives in it.
Yeah, I typically build silent stuff myself. So when it comes down to it, I will opt for the silent option no matter what, whether it's the graphics card, the fan, the power supply. It all has to run to where I can barely notice it.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. Actually, I used to not care as much for the server because I put it in a separate room, but now for some reason, I needed to have a server next to my desk. So now it's in the room, so I have to be a little more conscientious about my fan choices on that machine. Because you could hear that server back then. I had like some crazy. I had like something that was putting almost as much air as one of those big fans that you use for cooling you down your room. And I had the equivalent of that much CFM in one in the case at the time. And that thing sounded like making it sound saying that it sounded like a jet engine is an insult to jet engines. I mean, seriously, it was crazy.
So we briefly touched on what you came on board to do with the app. So let's just kind of break out that a little bit further real quick. So one of my original goals with this application this app for Android was not only to have the client and access the back end, but I really wanted to take that API, the Myth TV Services API that we talked about numerous times on here, and have a reusable library out there for somebody to, potentially, hey, if they want to write their own app, by all means, go right ahead. But if you want to write a Java desktop client, you could do it. If you want to put it somewhere else, like now, like with a Google TV app, which is a slightly different kind of, development model than, say, the Android phone or tablet type of a market. So this way, a reusable library could be out there, and anybody can take advantage of it. So now, when Sebastian came on, he took that challenge and really like went full bore with it. Go ahead and tell us about that.
Okay, so yeah, it's well, the first thing was making sure that things are quite abstracted enough so that it can be reused. And already the code was that you wrote was pretty good at that. It was nice and separated, so it was very easy. But yeah, the main thing for me also having that API also was to be able to test it. And especially, we had some discussions before about that, being able to have this on so go somewhere on the server and being tested against data after data, and being able to have some type of regression test, because I always got hit and kicked hard in the butt with, a slight change in an API, nobody catches it, and then suddenly nothing works. Yeah, for the Google TV stuff, that was where I really, I think it's shining now. And I think that anybody can grab that thing and really go to town with it. We have a pre we have it pretty nice and nicely organized right now. If you, especially with 0.26 that is out, if you want to do anything against 0.26, this thing is the way to go.
Definitely. Yeah,
Yeah, the Google.
with the improvements in 0.26, they're giving us, and we might get a little bit technical here on this, but they're giving us the ability to not only compress or request the data compressed on the back end server, which is going to be smaller download times for your phone when you say happen to be out and about and you just have a couple quick minutes to want to do something on it, right? The other thing is they allow us to check a I guess I don't want to call it a timestamp, but in from an HTTP standpoint, there's this notion of an e tag, which allows you to check it once, right? When you, the first time you download this resource, you check it, store this information somewhere. Then the next time you want to get that same resource, you pass along this tag with it, and it tells you whether or not it changed or not. So you don't have to waste your time, potentially battery, processing time once you get the file. You don't have to waste any of that stuff if the numbers are the same in a sense. So that's at its barest minimum right there. So with MythTV 26 and the new or the updates to the live streaming, we now have access to a lot of these things that are going to help us do a bunch of this stuff. And Sebastian went and implemented all of that stuff inside of this code here.
Actually, that was the, I think that was the last change to the overall, I mean, that's the change, the last before last change that we did to the API itself, because you did re-implement the response setup. Yeah, that was that thing. Actually, I'm using that really heavily in the Google TV app right now. It's saving my butt in many ways. All I do is keeping track of the e tags that are returned, but based on the type of data and based on the timestamp of the data. For instance, as we were talking about program, I'm downloading one day at a time worth of programming, and I keep track of the e tag. And when I re-request the same thing, let's say the day after, I don't even need to. And I have, let's say, the next 14 days, and ne 2 days later, I only have 13 days on the DB. It checks against all the e tags. Each time I get the e tag return, if it matches, I don't have to touch anything. And if it's the e tags don't match, I just need to do an update. And you save quite a decent amount of time. My, for instance, I go for the e tag processing. It just it really takes more time on the server to process than actually on the client to process when there's a match and the server doesn't return you any data and just tells you, hey, this is the e tag and it matches.
So once everybody starts migrating to MythTV 26, and we will be able to implement this much more cleanly, I believe, inside of the application, and the same enhancements that Sebastian, put in there or in the Google TV version will also be available inside of the the Android app itself, and your phone and tablet will thank you for it, I believe.
Yeah, with the Google TV one, I because nothing is out, I can make the I can say, hey, you know what, 0.26, that's the way to go. That's the minimum requirement, and we build up from there. So I have that luxury that wasn't there for the app. But yeah, it is really a helpful feature. Changes drastically your the amount of time you spend processing data.
So Dan, let me ask you, you guys decided to make this the first beta release. What was the decision that pushed you guys to do this?
Well, I think we reached a point where stability and functional wise, it just seemed right to put it out, and we did some minor tweaks over the last couple of days and stuff like that, and it just seems like it was a good starting point to get it out there. We had a couple other things, like I said, the this application is actually endorsed by the MythTV core developers. They've been, at least from what I've heard, they've been talking for quite some time about having, you know, their own Android app, you know, with the code, or their own Android app, all the code, all that kind of stuff, and they just haven't had the time to kind of to get it underway. So what we, you know, originally, you know, when we originally set this out, I wanted it to be the official Android app for MythTV. So we offered up the code. We transferred all the repositories over under ones that are on GitHub that are managed by the, you know, MythTV development team. And so this code is fully, you know, under the control of MythTV. So I mean, anybody is willing to come in and take a look. We've already had a couple people do some pull requests on GitHub to provide some extra, you know, benefits to the code. So I mean, it's really been, you know, great, I think. And now that it's more recognized underneath MythTV, I'm hoping that we can get some more people to jump on board with this and really kind of push this thing further to what it needs to be.
So it's available in the Google the Play Store, right?
Yes,
it
is.
You can actually
as of last night, which was what is the date today? As of midnight on October 7th, it's been out in the Play Store.
Awesome. So no more downloading from the GitHub repository.
Nope, you won't have to if you just want to wait for it out there. For those of you who still want to, you know, download it and build it yourself, by all means. One other thing about the library is we use a build product called Maven, and it's open source. It just manages all your dependencies for you. It'll go out and download the latest versions, all that kind of stuff. So what we did with the library is we've taken this build and pushed it out online. So anytime we make any enhancements to it or anything like that, we push a new version out to it. Everybody immediately can download it. I think there's like about a 2-hour sync window out there for it, but once it gets pushed out and that sync takes place, anybody can download this thing and access the latest version of it. And all you do is inside of our existing code, we just say, use the MythTV Services API, get it online, and use this version of it. Boom, it just pulls it down, puts it in place, everything is good to go. So it really works out nice.
I noticed you got, looks like you updated the artwork in there. Who's doing the artwork?
When we started out this, we were looking for some artwork, and there was kind of like a friend of a friend. His name is Jay Paru. I'm gonna mess this up. Paru again. He's out in Chicago, and he takes amazing pictures. He's done a lot of, you know, he's been really receptive to our ideas and whatnot, and he has contributed all of this artwork to the application.
Yeah, it looks nice.
I like it. I like it a lot, and I'm really impressed with what we were able to turn on. Considering I'm not a graphics guy, you know, when it comes to layout and UI, I just kind of fall a little short. My strengths are more, you know, back end related, you know. So but I, with the help of the other guys and Jay's artwork, I mean, it's been awesome.
So the big question for me is, when are you guys going to start doing some of the other functionality besides the basic video playback? Are you going to do video playback? Are you going to do music?
Yes, my intention is to do all of those things. All of the APIs, you know, from the MythTV services standpoint exist. So once we just, it's more or less just, you know, finding time to write the services to download or to get the data to download, and that's really it. You know, layout, we can kind of reuse a bit of the layout and stuff like that from other areas of the application, but the services are what tend to be, I think, the more time consuming. Well, at least for right now, the more time consuming thing is just to make sure that you're getting the data, you're checking all your checks, you know, making sure, you know, you don't end up with different exceptions and all that kind of stuff, handling all those exceptions, all that kind of stuff. So the ideal way to write an app like this is not only to just query it online, because, you know, when you're out on your cell phone and you're not on a Wi-Fi network somewhere, or hell, even if you're on a Wi-Fi network, nothing's ever guaranteed to be there, right? So the end where you're trying to reach is not necessarily always there. So what you end up doing is you make these tiny little calls to the server and download the data locally, process it locally, whether you're storing a file, loading a database, you know, doing whatever. You want to have this so that it's immediate and it's accessible to the user right then and there while they're doing what they're doing. And then should they need a network resource, let it go out and call the network. And if it doesn't exist or whatever, you more or less just show them the existing data that you have. You don't refresh the data at that point until such time as you can actually get back onto the network and refresh that data. And it all needs to be transparent. And so that's really what we're trying to do, is make accessing your content as transparent as possible. And, you know, it's not always that easy. With the last release that we had out there in the dev branch, you know, it was really slow. I mean, it was really slow to download all that data and process it, put it in a database and do all that kind of stuff.
It's much improved. The speed of, you know, downloading the guide and syncing up the recordings and all that stuff seems to be much, much more seamless now. It's tolerable.
Definitely.
So let's talk a little bit more about the functionality. You can look at your guide information, right? But you can't browse into the details from the guide, right?
And
you
can't not just yet. But it's,
and you can't make any. You can't like schedule recordings from the client, right? Not yet.
Not yet. That's why it has a nice big beta tag on it there. So, but that is all coming. And at least from what I've seen with the other apps out there, and I commend them. I commend them for what they've done out there and everything like that. But I don't think that anyone else is showing program guide information or anything like that. And I wanted to go out there with this type of information in place so that you could see. It's nice that you can just kind of swipe through and see, oh, this is what's going to record today, and this is what's going to record tomorrow, and this is what's going to record 3 days from now, that type of thing, if you go and look at that type of stuff. Likewise, the programs themselves, you know, that was the main, that was the initial first goal, was get that information out there. And it really kind of just grew. It's like, oh, well, now we can, since we're doing this way, we can really kind of pull down the program guide data and show that and do all that kind of stuff. Your recording rules. If you go onto the recording rules piece of it, you can actually activate and deactivate them. And that was our first kind of test into how can we modify what's going on the back end like that. So next piece of that is you're going to actually be able to go in and view all of those rules. And then once you get into a rule specifically, if you want to edit that, you're going to be able to go in more or less see what you see on MythWeb right now. You have those types of functions, whether they're little checkboxes, that they should almost mirror what's on MythWeb. And that's really what this app needs to do for the most part, is mirror MythWeb to a degree, as well as add in all the live streaming information.
Yeah, I actually like using MythWeb, honestly, for like doing searches for like programs, any like managing my recording schedules.
That's, yeah, me too.
It's just easier and it's just organized much better, I think, than scrolling through, you know, the regular Myth interface. You know, plus you got it on, you know, in a web browser, you can go up and down, and it just seems a little more flexible.
Right.
Yeah, I think once you get to that point where you're able to like schedule recordings and delete recordings and schedule, you know, get rid of the schedules and modify them and whatnot, it the client is pretty complete as far as from basic playback and setup and all that, and then the multimedia stuff is just gravy at that point.
Right. Yeah. And really, with the way that the HTTP live streaming is set up, we should theoretically be able to take any type of content. So if you have a movie collection that's MKV or, you know, XVID or AVI or whatever, MPEG 4, H.264, you name it, whatever format you store your movies in, it should be able to transcode that. I believe. I don't think that there's any limitation on the container that's originally stored in. You know, so long as MythTV can play it, I think it can transcode it. Likewise with the audio as well. I mean, now hopefully if you have a FLAC file out there for audio, it's not gonna, it'll do something to you know, short or to minimize how much data it actually has to push over to you. Maybe it's first transcoding it down to like like an MP3 file and then pushing MP3, or I don't know what it's really doing as of this point. But I'm interested to get in there and find out what it's doing. Creating like a playlist editor out there is really going to be something too. So, but definitely, I think scheduling recordings and all that, and now that you know, Sebastian has kind of come up with a what I think is a cleaner way to, you know, download all the data and load it to a database and whatnot. That's much more faster than the way we were previously doing it. I think that becomes much more. It becomes better suited to scheduling recordings without necessarily having to be connected to the back end. Because for one, if you look at how like a if you're on Android and you look at the YouTube app, okay, you have this kind of global search at the top, right? There's only one way you can access data when you implement a global search like that inside of Android, at least that I could find. Now maybe that's changing or it will change or whatever, but there's only one way to do it. It's not accessing a database directly. It's what Android calls a content provider. So it's a way to kind of front a database. Once we have that local database of all those recordings, we don't have to be implementing a search that goes back and searches the MythTV backend. We can do all of that stuff locally. Then it becomes somewhat trivial to display a form where you get the recording rules, and then you can quickly edit something right there, which really is going to, in a sense, be the recording rule screen. So once that rule edit screen is in place, you'll be able to go in and we'll be able to go in and reuse that piece of it to actually schedule the recordings, I believe. And once that's done, you name it, you'll be able to access that from your upcoming list. You'll be able to access it from the program guide. So if you just happen to be scrolling through, you want to click on something, it's going to take you right into that recording rule screen. And whether it's new or whether you're updating an existing one, that's what will handle all that interaction with the back end.
Excellent. It's a big milestone, Dan. Congratulations to you guys, man. I know you guys been doing a lot of hard work on it, and it's pretty damn cool.
Yeah, it's we started this. When did we originally start this? I think it was, I want to say back in February. I think was when we started doing all this stuff. I don't quite remember the date. I should have written that down somewhere.
It's been a while.
But with like I said, this is the extravaganza. So with this release, you know, with the MythTV 26 release, we have the Linhess release. You know, I see a lot of good things for MythTV coming up. What do you guys think?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, my geekiness inside is very excited about the actually new kernel release with BRDFS support.
Oh yes, me too. I was thinking about that the other day. As soon as they said, "Oh, there's ButterFS coming. It's coming real soon." I want that nice 128-bit file system, and imagine what you could do with it on all of that storage.
This is not good news for my pocketbook. That is not good news for my pocketbook.
I gotta check out the Blu-ray playback. I mean, I'm gonna see if it's improved or not. I don't have a lot of Blu-ray discs, but you know, the couple that I have, they seem to work okay. There were a couple other discs that I had where they're like, you know, seasons of different TV shows that were not working. I gotta retry those to see if they work now.
I've been having trouble with the menus on any DVD lately with trying to play back a DVD. So I just say screw that. I rip it all to MKV with Make MKV and throw it on the NAS box, and I never have to worry about it again.
I actually hit a disc that it would not rip.
Make MKV wouldn't rip one?
Yeah, there was one I hit this weekend.
Do an update on it, because they may have pushed out an update recently to it.
Maybe.
Which, if you don't know what that is, Sebastian, Make MKV is a great tool for ripping DVDs and Blu-rays.
I'm actually using AnyDVD, the ripping tool for the Blu-rays. I rip them into the exploded folder structure and just grab the M2TS directly. And if the M2TS is broken up in many other M2TSs, I actually grab it and Make MKV on top of that.
Yeah, with all that storage out there, why bother? Why bother compressing anything, right?
Exactly. Why?
Well, Make MKV. I don't think it does any compression, Dan. It just does a straight rip, and it just puts it into a container.
No, you're correct, Pat. It doesn't do any compression. Handbrake, made by this group of French people, is the one that does the compression.
That's a nice program. I used to use that a lot, but. I don't seem to use it anymore since I got it, to Make MKV. It's pretty good. Plus, it's faster. You know,
yeah, and I use it only to rip the MKV files down to just a smaller version of it that I can put on my kids' Android tablets.
Actually, my usage is for my wife's shows when she wants to put them on her iPad. I have a user job that encodes her shows directly to an iPad format, iPad compliant format, which is just like a very simple command line with Handbrake, and so she has those pushed to her iPad, and that's it. So I have that done automatically. That's my usage of Handbrake right now.
Yeah, I used to be into those doing the user jobs, but I don't know. I'm lazy. Well, why re-encode if we could stream now, you know?
Yeah, I haven't had a need to set anything up lately. I don't have it. I don't have an iPad, and the everything else. I mean, everything we do is Android in this house. And I'm now that we have the app available, and once we get the rest of that stuff inside of it, there's not going to be a need to change any of the recordings over to anything, because we'll just be able to stream them.
Man, I have a grandiose idea for the app on Android tablet and the Google TV, using the Android tablet as a second screen, and using if I can get some Google TV device at one point with NFC, I have some grandiose idea for that, where you would tap your tablet to the Google TV device via NFC. It communicates, gets what you're playing, transfers it to the tablet, and then you go do your thing and watch whatever you were watching on TV on the tablet, and then come back, tap, and changes the focus back to the TV.
You know what? We got to talk a little more then, because I have some other ideas along that same line. Like, for instance, you just walk into that room and tap it, and it'll fire up MythMote to that particular screen, so that you can just start doing everything that you need to start doing right there, right? But I believe with the new HLS stuff that's going to be coming, I believe in 27, we may be able to, one, push it back and forth, you know, to a front end over the MythTV services API, as well as be able to, I think we were talking about earlier, but go directly to a specific point, you know, have it start transcoding at a specific point, as well as implementing, you know, the type of resolution and whatnot. You encode that right into the URL, and it should be really nice when it's all said and done. So I haven't seen that portion of it yet, but once we have that capability, that will be a big benefit for doing that type of thing.
Oh yeah, most definitely. And also, the nice thing is that now every change is going to be a gradual change.
Yes.
I've
been thinking too about somehow, because with the way that the current state of it is, implementing like a watch it later type of a thing. Because I know some people were asking, oh, can I do commercial skipping? Can I do live TV? Can I do seeking back and forth, you know, on the inside, once you have like MX player or Dice player, or not BS player anymore, but any player that's out there. But I think if we can kick off that live stream and just let it sit there on the server till you're actually ready to use it, I think that you'll be able to get that, you know, seeking back and forth, because it'll already be done, and the actual third-party player will be able to handle those seeking and doing all that stuff for us.
You should be able to do that, actually. I believe that there's an option as part of a request to create the stream, that you say, okay, keep X amount of segments at a time, or pretty much keep all segments on the server. So I'm sure that until you hit that delete stream, that should be, and you set it up to keep all segments, you should be definitely able to do that right away.
Yeah, I think it's possible. I just need to kind of play with it a little bit more to see how we're going to handle all of that stuff. So I think it's definitely possible.
Yeah, you can go crazy, man.
I think in the short term, we'll probably see something like that coming about. So.
No, yeah, and right now, I'm doing a lot of the work for the maintenance type of screens that we were talking about. You were mentioning earlier, Pat, where I'm actually doing quite a. I actually took a different route of a Google TV app, which is, instead of starting from, okay, let's try to stream something, my goal was, okay, let's try to manage that MythTV backend from there, and not having to go anywhere, because a lot of the stuff is going to be integrated straight within the Google TV ecosystem, not really having to launch an app itself, everything being there from the Google built-in apps. So I actually am starting really from the upcoming screen. The upcoming screen was my very first screen that I started and worked my way out from there. My next step is the recording schedule screens.
Yeah, I know, Dan, we had the discussion when we were talking about, you know, the fact that, you know, this is a Java infrastructure that you could really create front ends written in Java using the whole Java stack on whatever platform. Heck, you can even be able to do it on a regular PC, you know?
Definitely. Yeah, that's why I wanted to have the library out there so that, you know, any type of front end that wants to use Java, they could come along. You know, it's not inconceivable, I guess, to want to, I don't know why you would want to do this, but create like a full-blown Java server in its place, right? That would handle this. And maybe you have something then that just streams it out from, you know, from there or whatever, or manages all the interactions or something like that. So I don't know why you would want to do it, but it's not inconceivable that you couldn't do this stuff. So, but definitely a Java client, you know, of any type would be able to take this library and really run with it.
Actually, my first step was removing all the Android references into the library that exist and trying to go straight to straight through J2SE and being able to build and run it from there.
Yeah, and really what that buys us is, like Sebastian was mentioning earlier with the testing, we can literally throw this into a continuous integration environment and have it monitor our Git repository, and anytime we commit anything, it just runs the test and just blast us with emails if something's broken, which is really nice. You find that in a lot of shops, actually.
Yeah, actually, we need to set up the continuous integration. I know we've been talking about it, but I've been so involved within that between Google TV and other sporting type of events. I haven't been able to do much more work on the continuous integration side.
Well, when this is done, there'll be an enhancement issue out there waiting for you.
I appreciate it.
I'll keep you on your toes.
I'm sure.
Exciting stuff, man. Exciting stuff. Is there anything else you guys want to cover before we wrap things up? Or
I think we pretty much hit everything. I just want to give a congratulation and a thanks out to these guys helping us out here. You know, Sebastian, Tom, John. You know, everything has just been, it's been great working with these guys, and I really look forward to seeing what we can do with the next, you know, the next couple months and the next year. Who knows? We'll see. And also congratulations out to the Core Myth TV developers with the release 26. You know, Cecil and Lynn Hess and their 9th anniversary. I mean, 9 years. I mean, that's been going for a long, long time.
Yeah, that's ages, really, man, great. In the open source world.
Yep,
that's a long time.
Yeah. So it's great, and I just want to, you know, again, congratulations to all these guys, because it's something that we're passionate about. That's why we do this show. You know, we get together and we talk about this stuff, and I'm really just really excited to see what's going to come, you know, down the pike.
Excellent stuff, guys. Thanks for everything. You know, everyone who's contributed, we appreciate your contributions.
Well, thanks for having me.
Thank you, Sebastian. It's nice talking to you.
Thanks for being on here, Sebastian.
Thank you. All right, take care.
Good night.
See ya.
Hey, Clayton from Cell Dweller here, and this is the Beta 1.0 version of Birthright, brought to you by Ubisoft's Haze.
Listening.